It's time for the Podketeer Podcast.
Good morning, Christopher Robin.
Oh, good morning, Winnie the Pooh.
Oh, well, glad to meet you. Name's Tigger. T-I-double-G-R. That spells Tigger.
Now, isn't this a clever disguise?
It's the Podketeer Podcast with your host, Mark Tanner. Take it away, Mark.
This could be about anything. And if you're like me, you wait and see. For I've got curiosity.
Hello, Podketeers, and welcome to episode 45 of the Podketeer Podcast. I am in my mobile recording studio bright and early in the morning on my way to work. I wanted to tell you that last week's episode had some problems. If you tried to download it and had trouble, look again, because I'm going to post the show again with a slightly different name. iTunes, unfortunately, when you try to edit something and put it back where it was, it doesn't recognize the second file, and I should have realized that because I've had trouble before with it. So what I did was is I took the edited file and I changed the name, and I'm going to put it out there today with alongside this week's episode. So I apologize for any trouble you may have had. What it was I downloaded last week's show, and then I listened to it as I put it together, but I didn't listen very carefully. And unfortunately, the Fly Girls audio was muffled for some reason. I still don't understand why, because I recorded it almost exactly the same way that I recorded the audio that I did for the Plaza Gardens. So why it turned out different, I'm not quite sure. I used the same recorder, held it the same way, had the same settings, but I ended up with a different sound. So that was the reason that I redid the audio. And I called it the same thing. I deleted the old file, put down a new file. But unfortunately, when I tried to download the show again, I deleted the original show from my iTunes, and I tried downloading a new copy of the file, and it wouldn't come down. So I'm not sure. They must put some kind of code on it when you initially upload it, and if the code isn't the same, then it won't download. So as I said, I apologize if you had trouble, but if you try it again, you'll get last week's episode and this week's episode. I was just a bit hurried putting this week's episode together. I went on YouTube looking for some inspiration for this week's episode. I haven't been to the park since last weekend, so I really didn't have any idea what to put together. That's why I would love to have a co-host for the show. But so far, the people that I have approached, mainly just two, that are annual pass holders and so therefore would be able to go out to the park with me, I haven't been really interested in doing it. They're busy too, so I don't know what I'm going to do about that end of things. But I'm gonna do something. I may change this to an every other week show, but I don't want to. I want to keep it every week. Just give me a little leeway so that the weeks when I don't get the show out till Monday, you won't be too upset with me, because as you may have noticed, it's Monday. So I apologize if you were looking forward to the show yesterday and are now listening to it on Monday. Disneyland is still there, I'm quite sure. Still very much looking forward to the Cars Land opening. I don't know if any of you who are annual pass holders, make sure you register your annual pass on the website and sign up for the contest that they have. They're going to have, I don't know how many people. I haven't really seen anywhere where it says how many people. Although, to be honest with you, I haven't read the webpage very carefully. How many exactly they're going to have out there. But they're going to invite annual pass holders who win this contest out to preview Cars Land. So I would assume there'll probably be a few hundred that'll get to go to Cars Land. Since there are over a million annual pass holders, that's not a real high percentage, but hey, it's a chance. The only other way you might get in is if they decide to do a cast member preview. Because a lot of times on the cast member preview, they're allowed to bring a guest. Now, I have been trying desperately, as you may recall from past shows, to talk some unsuspecting cast member into inviting me along on the cast member preview. But I have spoken to a number of cast members, and none of them have heard anything about a cast member previews, so there may actually not be one. Now, I have been to several cast member previews. To anyone who's listened to the show for a while, you'll know my daughter was a cast member until reasonably recently. And I used to go with her to all the cast member previews. Now, the last one we went actually was courtesy of a friend of hers, because she had already left the employ of the mouse. And she took us to the preview of Star Tours. Now, I also got to see the Little Mermaid ride early, and I got to see Toy Story Mania early. So, I have taken advantage of a number. Oh, and the Finding Nemo on the submarines. Got to see that early. That's pretty nice, especially Toy Story Mania, because if you went out to the park, you'll know that the first few weeks at Toy Story Mania was just a madhouse in terms of the length of the line. It's not the longest line I've ever stood in, but it was pretty long. The record for the longest line is Rocket Rods for me. I stood in line for 3.5 hours for Rocket Rods. That is the line for a ride. Yeah, so. And I was in for about 3 hours for Star Tours when it originally opened. I got a watch. They passed out these Star Wars watches to, I don't know how many people got them, but I'd say probably 1,000, because there was a lot of people in line. And Lucas handed them out to some of them. He was there. I couldn't really see all the way up at the front, but I'm pretty sure he was handing the watches out. And unfortunately, I wasn't close enough to the front to get one handed to me by him. I got one handed to me by a cast member. But it was still pretty cool. And I still have that watch. And it actually still works when I put a battery in it. I took the battery out because I didn't want to take a chance on the battery self-destructing. But as I said, the watch still works, and I didn't want to take a chance on the battery melting down, because they have acid in them, and when batteries go bad, it can be unfortunate for whatever appliance the battery happens to be in. I buy and sell antique toys, and some of the old toys are battery-operated, and that's really sad when you find some nice battery-operated toy from the 50s and 60s, and you open the battery compartment up, and some battery is dissolved inside of it and destroyed the inner mechanism. Like I said, it's really sad, especially when it's a nice, clean toy. That just breaks your heart. So, didn't want that to happen to my Star Wars watch. It's a pretty plain watch. There's nothing special about it other than the fact that it says Star Wars on it. It's probably a 99-cent watch with a Star Wars sticker on the front. But I know it was a freebie, and you can find them on eBay every once in a while. They're in Steve Sansweet's collectible book listed in there, and I think he puts the price at like $100 or something. They're not worth that. But like most collectible books, they always overprice the stuff. It's... Well, you know why most collectible books overprice stuff is because most collectible books are written by people with a whole bunch of the stuff that they want to get rid of. So they have a tendency to write prices in there that are way higher than what the stuff's really worth so that they'll get more money out of it. I don't know if that is a widely known thing. Not all books. No, there are some legit ones. Richard O'Brien's Collecting Toys was probably the best one, I think. And that one hadn't been published for a while, and I'm not sure if Mr. O'Brien is still with us. I hope so. But I don't believe they've issued an updated version of that in quite a while. And that was a huge book. It was like a phone book. In terms of thickness, even more so. And it didn't contain everything, because it's, you know, almost impossible to put one book together that has everything. That's why there's so many different books. But it was pretty good. There are Disneyana books also out there that specialize, as I just said, in Disneyana. I haven't really seen what I'd call a great one. There are a lot of them that have nice pictures of Disney stuff and a little bit of a list here and there of things, but there's nothing that I would say has a comprehensive list of Disney toys. Maybe there is something. If somebody knows of something, let me know and I'll make a mention of it here on the show. But just don't know of one offhand. I know Rakes has one. That's R-A-K-E-S. They have a Disneyana book. I believe Tomart did a Disneyana book for a while. It's T-O-M-A-R-T. They were heavily into the collectible books for a long time. I haven't really been buying books. There's a company called LW Book Sales. If you ever want a collectible book of any kind, take a look at them on the internet. You can pick the books up for a fraction of what they go for in the stores. Books that are $25 are going for $15. But the main thing is you have to buy 5 or 6 books in order to get that price. But if you're into collectibles, it's not hard at all to find 5 or 6 books that you want to buy. Because most people are not just into one thing. Most people are into half a dozen different things, like me. I collect antique toys. I mainly concentrate on plastic toys. That's just my thing. But I also collect Disneyana, with a focus on Mickey Mouse. I have a lot of other non-Mickey Mouse things, but also mainly Mickey Mouse. And then I also collect Star Wars and Star Trek, because I'm a big fan of science fiction. So, as you can see, I have 4 main areas of collectibles. And I've even got some Lakers stuff and some Angel stuff, so... But don't really collect that so much as just I like to have a few things around. So, I think I have gone off into enough varied things. This is probably the longest monologue segment of the show that I've ever done. Now, that was a very unfortunate fellow. Guy with a wagon dressed in black riding his bicycle across the street against the light. That's just unfortunate. All right, as I was about to say, I have a lot of clips today. I started focusing on Stan Freeze, and I got as much interesting things as I could about Stan Freeze, so I'm going to have 3 or 4 clips about him. Now, he was a talent coordinator, still is, the talent coordinator at Disneyland. He's worked for Disneyland for about 40 years. He's been the talent coordinator for about the last 20 years. Where I got interested in Stan Freeze is when I went to the last performance at the Carnation Plaza Gardens. He was there along with his son Jason Freeze. Jason performed. He's a saxophone player. He used to be with the Goo Goo Dolls, as you'll recall from the last show. And he performed out there with his alma mater, the Tuffery Middle School Jazz Band. And his dad, Stan Freeze, was in attendance. Now, on YouTube, I found 2 or 3 versions of a short little speech he gave after the band was finished playing at Carnation Plaza Gardens. Although I'm not positive it was after. It might have been before, because I really couldn't tell from the way it was put together. And there was a little bit of music in there, so I saved that. So I'm going to play that for you. There is a short video that was on there from an achievement award that he had received. There were several other things on there, but they didn't really seem to have much of a Disney tilt to them. He had a Father's Day little clip that was on there with both of his sons. And like I said, they didn't really mention Disney very much. The Achievement Award, it's mainly talks about Disney. Now, what I also clipped out of YouTube is I found some interesting Bob Gurr audio. Now, any of you who are Disney fans have probably already run across this, but there is a company called 8-Pin Publishing that has put together some interesting historical videos that they sell on DVDs with biographical information and Disney information from Bob Gurr on Disneyland as a park and his relationship with Walt. So you might take a look at their website. I know you can find most of the stuff, previews of most of the stuff, on YouTube. As I said, it's called 8-Pin Publishing. And that's where I got a couple of these clips from. So I hope you'll check them out and see about picking up their CDs, because I think they're worth picking up. So, I think I've rattled on long enough. Gee. So, on with the rest of the show.
This is a great night. You're all a part of Disney history tonight. And, give yourselves a round of applause. You all are a real treasure, a community to the Disney family. And, you know, your voices are heard, and, you know, you're preaching to the choir about this stage. I've led bands on this stage for 20 years between the Disneyland band and the big band. So part of my heart's leaving here tonight along with all of you folks. But you have been wonderful. You're a very special community, and we love you dearly. We are so hoping that you continue to support this, because the tradition is the longest running tradition of swing and big band in the world. So that being said, we did not want there to be a week in between tonight and when we transplanted this, which we're doing, to Downtown Disney on the stage between the Rainforest Cafe and the theater. So we're not going to miss a beat. We're going to continue that over there. Please continue to support. We have the same bands that have been here for the past couple of years. This great band. So Downtown Disney has agreed to play host and is tickled to do that while the construction's going on, and we don't know how long that would be. I'm hearing it's going to be the same floor, so that's all good news. Anyhow, so please, I guess what I just want to do is to ask you to keep supporting in the Disney fashion the swing and the big band stuff by coming over Saturday nights to Downtown Disney, and then we'll see you back over here when everything is, the dust is settled. So.
Well, the next thing up here is going to be Stan Free's Lifetime Achievement Award. And before I get into that, I wanted to mention that while searching around on YouTube for stuff, I ran across this Secret Live of Walt Disney series of video files on YouTube. Apparently it was some kind of a British television show. And there's a bunch of people on there with obvious sour grapes towards Walt Disney. I've never heard any of these accusations that's made by these people. One of them that makes a lot of the accusations is Bill Melendez, who is a Snoopy animator, was a former Disney animator, and it's famous for the piano music that they use in all the Charlie Brown and Snoopy cartoons. And I guess he really left Disney with a bad taste in his mouth, because he just bashes Walt Disney left and right. And there's a number of other people that also do in this series of videos. And, you know, I don't want to put that audio out there, because I just think it's garbage. I don't believe in what they're saying. I've heard too many stories that this thing suggests that Walt was anti-Semitic and was prejudiced against black people. And there's a lot of people that had Stone Age attitudes back then towards different people. So it wouldn't surprise me to hear that Walt was prejudiced. But I have never heard that he was to the extent that they're suggesting he was in this British documentary. Now, I'm going to listen to the whole thing, and I may play some bits and pieces of it, but I'm also going to refute a lot of it with other documentation that I've got myself. And, you know, I've listened to Neil Gabler's book, and if Diane Disney Miller does not like Neil Gabler's book on Walt, I can't imagine what she must think of this British documentary. She must just be breathing fire when she listens to this thing. So, anyway, here's Stan Freese and his the audio from his Lifetime Achievement Award.
This is something. I mean, this is a big deal, you know? I mean, Joe Escalante called me about a month ago, and he said, a friend of mine, Lou Gehlen, might be calling you to see if you'd be, you know, amenable to receiving a Lifetime Achievement Award, Orange County Music Awards. I said, are you kidding? I couldn't believe it. I really could not believe it. So I said, yeah, I'm thrilled. And so I took out a couple of billboards on the 5 freeway. Yeah. Little things like that. And then I realized that really part of what this whole thing is about, a Lifetime Achievement Award, is being old. All of a sudden I went, shoot, man. They don't give this award to 40-year-olds. And, but that's one of the, it's the first time in my life I'm glad that I'm old. And, it's just been a great ride at Disney. I've been so fortunate. I mean, it was luck. Some people are lucky. Some people, I have seen this in my life so often. There's a lot of great musicians that never make it at all. And there's a lot of musicians that aren't great that make it, And you wonder what's going on, And I think that it's like karma, It's reincarnation. If you're supposed to make it, you're going to make it. If you're not, you're not. So I was lucky. I was supposed to have a neat job where I could hire musicians. I could give professional musicians money. I could give them work. And I'm blessed. That's so neat. I mean, that's all. It's way neater than I even, I'm so blessed to be able to give great musicians employment at Disneyland or the other theme parks and all. Somebody said, you hire all these different kinds of, what's your favorite kind of music? And I'll tell you, my favorite kind of music is music that comes, that you believe in and you play from your heart, no matter what it is. That's actually right. If it's well done,
take it over.
If you believe in it and you give it your all and you love it and you do it well, then I love it. I love speed punk. I love the speed energy punk. Of that. If it's done well, I love
speed punk.
Great country music. I love. I was on Hee Haw for 10 years. I better like it, But to all of you, I would say, do the very best you can in what you're doing. Watch who you hang out with. You show me your friends, and I'll show you your future. And so that means the kind of people they are and the kind of players they are. Hang out with other good players. Become a good player or a good singer. This whole evening is just so wonderful. I want to thank Luke and the Orange County Music Awards. I want to thank everybody involved with this. I want to thank Marilyn for saying what she said, which is really nice. I want to thank my son Jason for being here. Josh is out with Paramore someplace, and he called and said to have
that.
Fun.
And
my wife Tara and all of my friends. I have 3 tables of great friends out there.
I'm a lucky guy. He's following him around. He's a fan.
And that's the end of that. Thanks, guys.
Out of the darkness it will come, big as 2 city blocks, with 700 legs, 5,000 eyes, and it feeds on electricity. When you see it, you'll never forget it. It's the Main Street Electrical Parade, part of the magic of the Walt Disney Company. Weekends at Disneyland.
I got one last little bit of audio here. This isn't Stan Freese, and it's really not connected at all to this. But I ran across this, and I love Raleigh Crump, listening to his stories. Him and Bob Gurr are pretty close to being tied for the best storytellers, I think. And this is an interesting little bit of audio from Raleigh Crump about the World's Fair Tower. The Tower of the Four Winds, I believe it was called. And he tells kind of the story of why it didn't end up at Disneyland. So I'm going to play that for you, and then we'll wrap up the show after that. So here we go.
My boss, Dick Irvine, calls me in, and he says, Raleigh, we're going to put you on the hot seat. And I said, what? So I went to the office, and all the vice presidents were in the office. And so he said, Dick Irvine said, you know, we don't want to bring the Tower of the Four Winds back to Disneyland. And I said, well, neither do I. And they said, well, we want you to tell Walt. Now, get this. I'm a guy in a pair of Levi's and a sweatshirt, and here's all the vice presidents and their ties and suits. And they don't want to tell him. They want me to tell him. And it was really kind of cute. Each one of them had a reason. You know, one of them was it cost too much money to bring it back. Another one's they'd have to maintain it. Another one, they had, because some of the propellers did come off at the World's Fair, they were afraid that if they came off at Disneyland, they might kill somebody. And I knew and I understood that. So, but Walt wanted to bring it back. So we had the meeting with Walt and about Small World, but then we never discussed the tower during that meeting. And then finally at the end, Walt said, is that it? And I said, and I used to grab his coattail when he'd sit next to him. And I said, Walt, I said, about the Tower of the Four Winds. And that's when he'd frown and the eyebrow would go up. And he says, what about the Tower of the Four Winds? And I said, I don't want to bring it back. He says, what do you mean you don't want to bring it back? I said, I don't, you know how I feel about it. I don't want to bring it back. He went to every one of those guys and said, are you concerned about the cost of bringing it back to the finance guy? Well, a little bit, but not really, you know. And then he went to one of the engineers. Are you worried about engineering, the safety of it? A little bit, but no, it's okay. So they were backpedaling with everything that he said, but then they would admit that they were a little concerned. Well, at that point in time, Walt knew that I had been set up. You know, I mean, the man was absolutely brilliant. So he said to him, he says, okay, we won't bring it back. So they, let me tell you, they were up and out of their chairs and out of that room in 10 seconds flat. And he went to get up, I pulled his coattail. I said, Walt, does it really bother you that we didn't bring it back? He says, no. But a lot of us, I look back on it now, if I'd known that we were going to bring it back, I never would have done the Small World clock. See, I would have developed the design of the Tower of the Four Winds to be part of the facade. But I wasn't informed. See, they never, a lot of times, and that had to do with management, they didn't really tell you what's going on. It was only Walt that would, you know, tell you. But the other thing was that once you did something for Walt, everybody stood back because, you know, he could get grouchy. And when he did get grouchy, whoever he got grouchy with, they deserved it. I was with him a couple of times when he unloaded on people, and they deserved it. He would never go after anybody that wasn't being pushy and out of line. So he was a sweetheart like that.
Now, in a kingdom very, very near.
Artu, do hurry. The passengers are boarding.
Prepare yourselves.
Welcome aboard.
For the ultimate Disneyland thrill attraction from the imagination of Disney and George Lucas. Because now, the adventure is real. Star Tours at Disneyland. In all the universe, there is no greater thrill. Now open at Disneyland.
Well, I promised you some Bob Gurr, so here's a little snippet from 8-Pin Publishing, some of those DVDs that I told you about. So make sure you get on their website and check that out. They're well worth purchasing, and I'm going to buy some. So on with Bob Gurr, and then we'll wrap it up.
Hi, I'm Bob Gurr. A lot of times people will ask me a million questions about Disneyland. Most folks assume that I only did work for Walt Disney. Well, I can assure you, I did work for all kinds of folks. Many jobs before Disney, a lot of jobs after Disney. Questions sometimes will come up. They says, well, Bob, didn't you have any training? Aren't you a licensed engineer? What got you started in design? Well, I'm going to tell you that. I was a troublemaker when I was like 5 years old. I loved airplanes. I loved cars, and I loved cars, and I loved airplanes. And we lived near the Grand Central Air Terminal in Glendale, which later turned out to be the tower building of Walt Disney Imagineering. Anyway, I had a box of Crayolas, and I would do animated strips of airplanes flying and fighting. And since I didn't have any paper, I drew this on my closet wall. And I saw the world in a way that, yes, you see what you see, but I wanted to draw the world as I was going to see it. So I wound up as an employee of the Ford Motor Company in the advanced styling department, and then 2 weeks later was sent to the Lincoln studio. But in only 2 weeks' time, I could see that Detroit is a dead-end place. That would be a dead-end job. And it was kind of a shock to have to make a decision that what I'd had my heart set on for many, many years, put all this effort into, I had the wrong job. And it was not going to be enjoyable one bit. So in October of 1954 was the first of a long series of jobs designing attractions for both Disneyland and Walt Disney World. Now the first attraction was the Autopia car body. Now remember, I'm not an engineer. I was never trained as an engineer, but I was trained as an automobile stylist. In other words, that's the artistic part of designing the exteriors of cars. Well, Walt assumed that since I did bodies, I also did the mechanical. I didn't have the courage to tell Walt, no, I'm not an engineer and I've never designed a mechanical part of a car. I just shut up and kept drawing. So anyway, the Autopia car project at Disneyland was the education and design, engineering, test, adjust, and re-engineering and refining in operation at Disneyland to teach ourselves what it was going to take to have equipment actually survive long-term at Disneyland. Now remember, Disneyland was a whole brand new idea of amusement park where everything was custom. Walt really didn't want to buy anything that was store-bought from some other manufacturer. So we were all in the fix of having to literally design and invent the stuff ourselves, and in so doing, we were not really experts at it. So we had to teach ourselves how to be experts, and that's what we did the rest of the summer of 1955 and going into 1956.
Well, okay, Podketeers, hope you enjoyed the show, because that'll do it for episode 45 of the Podketeer Podcast. So as usual, y'all take care of yourselves. Have a magical Disney week, and we'll see you at the park.
I wanna go park hopping fast, ride dropping, flying through space mountain sky. Magical dreaming, tower drop screaming, it's a spectacular night. I wanna Jungle go. Cruise roaring, Toy Story scoring, electric light parade in my heart soaring. Everyone go. Dancing, fireworks blasting, let's go to
Podketeer is in no way associated with the Walt Disney Company or any of its affiliates. Mickey Mouse Copyright 1928, The Walt Disney Company. Any similarity to Disney characters or real persons without satirical purpose, the act of reviewing products, or reporting on newsworthy events, is entirely coincidental. This podcast is licensed under the Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 3.0 license. For more information, visit our website at www.podketeer.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, Disneyland has now concluded its normal operating day.
Yeah, folks, and me and my pals hope you had a swell time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Mickey?
Uh-huh.
It's that time.
What time is that, Minnie?
Oh, Goofy?
Huh? Oh.
Now it's time to say goodnight
to all our company. M-I-C.
See you real soon.
So is Mickey Mouse.
K-E-Y.
Why?
Because we like you. M-O-U-S-E.
Home. For your shopping convenience, this evening, Main Street will remain open for an additional half hour.